It was a rumor that was going around for years that there was a company looking to buy in the whole area. First, I thought it was Disney. Then we found out it wasn't Disney. Then we heard it was going to be a big, huge indoor amusement park. As the years went by, we continued to hear the same story that properties were being looked at. And finally, it came true.
Wants the city to rezone parts of the historic amusement district to allow for condominiums.
Developers want to build timeshare units, restaurants, shops, movie theaters, and hotels there.
If you let me take out my BlackBerry, I'll tell you some of the tenants. Ripley's, believe it or not. Dave and Buster's. Bubba Gump.
Why can we not keep the old Coney Island that we all know and love?
Adam Chartoff for FilmWax Radio, the independent film talk show, where we sit down with filmmakers, actors, programmers, journalists, and others to chat about the state of independent film. And you can reach me with thoughts, feedback, suggestions, questions, complaints, missives at adam@filmwax.com, or you can find me at Twitter at FilmWax. We're on Facebook, facebook.com/FilmWax. Or /FilmWax Radio. So check it out. And today we're talking with my friend, filmmaker Amy Nicholson. Hi, Amy.
Hi.
Welcome to FilmWax Radio.
Thanks. Thanks for having me.
Ms. Nicholson directed her first nonfiction film in the fall of 2002, Beauty School, a wry portrait of the New York School of Dog Grooming, which premiered at Hot Docs. And air it on PBS, and also on the documentary channel. Those are two pretty blue-chippy type of organizations there.
Yeah.
That's pretty good for a first.
Yeah, the most exciting, though, was Virgin Atlantic on the in-flight entertainment. And then a friend of mine flew to London and took a picture of Beauty School on the little in-flight entertainment. It was so exciting.
Isn't it?
Yes, and it is also available on Amazon.
Okay, maybe I'll just dig deep into the pockets then.
It's a $2 rental.
Amy's first feature-length documentary was called Muskrat Love, and it premiered at the Hamptons Film Festival and went on to screen at Silver Docks, the Florida Film Festival, and Brooklyn International, among others, which is now known, by the way, as Brooklyn Film Festival.
Yes.
Muskrat Lovely. Sorry, I called it Muskrat Love.
That's okay. Most people do
that
because
again.
Of the famous song.
Well, you should... By the Captain and Tennille, I believe. Mm-hmm. That's scary that I knew that. Did Neil Sedaka write that one, too?
I think so.
It sounds like a Neil Sedaka song. Muskrat Lovely was broadcast nationally on the 2007 season of Independent Lens. Zipper is her third film. It premiered in New York at the Doc NYC Festival this last November. I believe we did a Q&A together.
Yes. It was really exciting.
You had lots of folks from the film and just all our friends and family.
Yeah, I had the whole set of what I call my Coney Island boyfriends, all five of them.
We're referring to the subjects in your film. Zipper essentially is a documentary feature about the dismantling of a number of things, but uses this ride called the Zipper, which has been around for forever.
Correct. Yeah, the Zipper guys had their own lot. Eddie Miranda, who was the main operator of the Zipper, he ran the lot. I mean, he rented the lot from a landlord. And when all the land started to be bought up by Thor Equities, he suddenly got an eviction notice. Somehow he fought and got one more summer, but for his last summer, he was surrounded by vacant lots and boarded up property because lots of stuff had already been bulldozed by that point, summer of 07. That's when we really started filming a lot, was 07.
But in a broader context, the film is about the dismantling of the character of Coney Island.
Because the guys that, you know, I have now fallen in love with, they were the character of the place. And there are a lot of guys like them down there that no longer have jobs.
And it's hard to watch. Once you meet these guys, meaning once you see the film, there's clear villains in this. Because regardless of your feelings of development and gentrification, there's just when you meet these guys and all of a sudden they're being displaced... and their livelihoods are being dismissed, in a sense, and their careers and life, basically. And some interloper kind of comes in and just buys up in the mayor's office. You know, it's all kind of packaged as a boon to New York and to Brooklyn.
Yeah. And as a cleanup, you know, which is very insulting to them.
Right. And to those many people also like them who love Coney Island and who find nothing wrong with it. You know, and we should say is it's not so black and white and completely. There are advantages to some cleanup and yes. improvements, and it yeah. does need that. And of course, since the whole story is trajectory has changed since Sandy.
That's right. Yeah. Well, infrastructure was always a big problem in Coney Island. The infrastructure had not been improved for many decades, and that was part of the plan. So I think that would have been welcomed by anybody who was down there struggling to, you know, find an electric box to tap into. You know, I think that was a really good part of the plan. I think any economic improvements that would have helped the neighborhood that is outside the amusement park, mm-hmm. I think that is all welcome. I think they would have welcomed, you know, extra jobs, extra, a few more people down there, more stores.
Sure.
But it became a very big, complicated mess very quickly.
Well, you can see through that process where the real priorities are.
Yes.
Are they to the shop owners? Are they to bringing in more independent shop owners and businesses? Or is it really to a gold mine, which is this beachfront property? Where are people's priorities in the development of Coney Island? You know, and I think your documentary explores that really well. The last thing I wanted to mention also is that it's one of the films that made such sense to include it in the FilmWax series, Brooklyn Reconstructed, because it deals essentially with the complexities. There are different sides to the issue, and there are a lot of people with different feelings about it, as they are about what's happening in various neighborhoods in Brooklyn and New York and other cities. And what's so great about your agreeing to show it is that, you know, the conversations that go on after our screenings are as much of the experience of Brooklyn Reconstructed than, you know.
Yeah, most definitely. I've attended many, actually almost all of those screenings, and I'm fascinated. I'm fascinated that there are yeah. so many contentious rezonings and mm-hmm. so many issues that are completely different involved in every neighborhood. I mean, there's, you know, Battle for Brooklyn deals with
the Atlantic Yards.
Yeah, Atlantic mm-hmm. Yards project, and, you know, Kelly Anderson's film My Brooklyn deals with, you know, the birthplace of hip-hop, which was the Fulton Mall, and the culture that evolved down there. But then she goes on to explain redlining mm-hmm. and some really other big issues that I'm not that brave to take on.
Well, I think you're pretty brave. If you watch Zipper, Amy Nicholson's film, you get to confrontations that are really actually very respectful also. You don't ambush anybody. And yet you have folks like Joe Sitt
of Thor Equities.
You interviewed for this film, which is mm-hmm. unbelievable.
Mm-hmm.
And you may remember him from My Brooklyn and probably some other documentaries. But.
Yeah, and we actually found him quite charming.
Yeah.
You may not like his taste in developing. You know, it's very retail-based, but he was a very nice man. And yeah, I try not to ambush anybody because I don't know enough to ambush anybody. Mm-hmm. I wanted to know what everybody wanted to know. I wanted to understand what was happening. So when I went into interviews, first, it's important to remember that all the interviews were done at very different times during the process. Just getting the interviews took a year. So, you know, depending mm-hmm. on who mm-hmm. we were talking to when, you would sort of get a different perspective on from that person, but also of where we were in the timeline, which was actually really interesting, made it difficult to cut, but also gave it a lot more dimension.
Sure.
Yeah, and the other thing is that, you know, I went into it thinking, okay, I just want to know. I just want to understand. Mm-hmm. So I just asked people what probably everybody wanted to know. It wasn't until we got the film back and really started to cut it together and some of the things just didn't add up, or it was confusing, or we just needed more of a template for explanation, that we went and did a little bit more research and really figured out what people were saying between the lines. And even then, we still didn't beat people over the head with it because it's just not my style.
Another major character is Reverend Billy.
Reverend Billy's in there because Reverend Billy, you know, really became involved in the protesting over the compromise that took place. I think the original plan was fairly well received by the public. I think everybody thought, okay, it's not brilliant, but it's taken a really long time for everybody to get to this point. Very difficult to get consensus between all the factions. And for that reason, I think a lot of people were on board with the original plan. And then when it really started mm-hmm, to get mm-hmm. compromised away and it was mm-hmm. very clear what was happening, mm-hmm. I think Rev and Billy stepped in and said, okay, this is one of my type of issues. Yeah, very colorful character. Yeah, follow him all the time.
Do you?
Yeah. Yeah, he fights good fights.
He lives in Park Slope, I reached out through to him at one point, and I was hoping maybe he would come, too.
It would be nice, yeah.
That screening will take place Wednesday, the 27th of February at 7 o'clock at the Brooklyn Society for Ethical Culture, 53 Prospect Park West in Park Slope, right there on 2nd Street, just
beautiful
blocks from Grand
building.
Army Plaza.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It will actually be the final screening.
The final.
The Brooklyn, yeah, this is it. I mean, you know, even though there's been a little bit of ebbing of crowds coming the last couple of months because of the weather and what have you, but I mean, most of those first bunch of screenings we had.
Well, the crowds are very engaged, even
yeah.
if there's,
yes,
you know, even
right.
if there's a smaller crowd than
right.
usual, the crowds
right.
are very engaged.
Right.
The people that come are very into the issues. You've had a lot of, you know, urban planning students, you know, architecture mm-hmm. people, you know, a lot of people from educational side, mm-hmm. as well as just people who are really into the issue and really want to know what's happening, so.
Community activists.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's an issue that here's my good double negative, it's an issue that hasn't not touched mm-hmm. one neighborhood in Manhattan. You know, I mean, in all of New York, actually, you know, I mean, Williamsburg, how many films did you show that were just about Williamsburg, you know? Two? Three? Yeah, which I didn't know much about, and that was really, really wonderful to see those, yeah. And they were all completely different, so.
Yes, Sue Friedrich, who's made one of those films, got renovation, and whose film got renovation will be playing at Film Forum shortly. She is will be on the show, FilmWest Radio, the night of our screening, yours and mine, of Zipper. That makes sense, though.
So everyone can listen on mm-hmm. their way to the screening.
Precisely. Exactly. In fact, we could play it over the sound system.
Actually, that's a great idea.
This is Adam Shartoff, host of FilmWax Radio, the independent film talk show, Wednesday night, 6:30 to 7:30 on bboxradio.com.
Racial history. It's not just an amusement park. This is the founder of all amusement parks.
This week, Mayor Bloomberg unveiled his own redevelopment plan for Coney Island.
High tech, high glitz. Coney Island would be reborn as a year-round destination.
It's a vision that includes major new opportunities for retailing and thousands of new housing units.
Nobody, including the city, nobody cared about Coney Island.
Let me give you an example. Williamson Home.
Junior's Cheesecake.
Maybe a Gap. Maybe a Duane Reade.
They could care less about the music business, about Zippers.
Where are you going to have your bar mitzvah?
We're talking with Amy Nicholson, filmmaker, Masquerade Lovely, and now The Zipper. Describe to me back in, it sounds like, the late 2000s, whenever you this first conceived of doing a film, what happened? What was the... you know, when was that germination? When did that take place? And like you kind of gathered the courage because, you know, making a documentary, you don't know how long you're in for.
Oh, yeah.
Not just
no
financing
idea.
It, but also just the subject, the story. Where does it begin and end? You just plunge in at
right.
something. You know.
Yes. Well, this was my last film. It had a beginning, middle, and end. It was a very specific time frame. It was a beauty pageant. And so I followed
right.
the pageant until someone won, and that was 2.5 weeks, mm-hmm. and very manageable. And you knew it was going to be that time. This, I think, because I didn't originally tackle the politics.
Mm-hmm.
Originally, I was just tackling the guys who were leaving. Just wanted to make a film about those guys. So what I did was... Yeah, it evolved very... you know, very much over time. So I was just reading the paper one day. I mean, I've been a fan of Coney Island for years and years. I grew up in Ocean City, Maryland, working there in the summer. So
well,
I
there's
love
another
that.
Amusement area. So it would have that through line.
I love that culture.
Mm-hmm.
Love that culture. And actually, in Ocean City, they have some very old amusements.
I bet.
Yet they're on their boardwalk that are great.
You've been to Asbury. I'm sure you've been to Asbury Park.
No, I have not been to Asbury Park,
what?
Believe it or not. I know. I have to
what?
Go.
What? We should have done
I
the
have
interview
to go.
From there.
I know. I know. But
that's a sad place.
Yeah, why? I followed that a little bit of that story too, but because it seems very similar, but yeah, I was just riding the subway one day reading the paper. I like the jumble and you know, it comes mm-hmm. in the Daily News and I was just reading the Daily News and mm-hmm. there was Eddie Miranda
likes
and his
the jumble.
Yeah.
I'd just like to know that.
Oh, yeah. I love the jumble. And there Eddie Miranda standing in front of his zipper. Big black and white photo of
Again,
him.
The zipper is the ride. Let's not
The zipper
worry.
Is a
Concern
carnival
people.
Ride. Mm-hmm.
It's He's standing in front of the zipper.
It's a hellacious carnival ride that was invented in the late 60s. And
it's a form of torture.
Mm-hmm. Oh, it is very torturous. But it's analog torture is as good as you can get. And so that was one of my favorite rides as a kid. Grew up in Maryland going to the state fair and riding that thing.
Really?
And I thought, wow, that thing's leaving Coney Island. That's really a shame. And, you know, my best friend and I from here, we used to go to Coney Island on Saturday nights and just hang out and drink beer and watch really? People dance in front of the Himalaya, and, you know, which they call the Polar Express, but we call it the Himalaya. And I just thought, oh, that's heartbreaking. Why is that ride leaving? And then I found out that a lot of the rides were leaving. This was before I even knew about Astroland. Mm-hmm. And, you know, so I went down and talked to them and said, can I follow it going? And I really didn't know where I was going with it. I just wanted to make a short film about this carnival ride that I loved when I was a kid. And then once it left, then I really needed to know what the backstory was.
Mm-hmm. And then you sort of follow it. We do learn what happens to the ride.
It went to Honduras.
Yeah.
We followed it down there. Mm-hmm. We weren't going to. That was almost one of the last things we did. Everybody kept asking us until finally one day I said, oh, to hell with it. I'll just get on a plane and go to Honduras and find the damn thing. So it really was that ridiculous.
I think there's another documentary that just came out, too. La Camioneta.
No.
Yeah. Mark Kendall, the filmmaker, I would love to bring on at some point, but he has a film, and it follows a school bus, which has been retired from some suburb. I can't remember where.
Oh, I have heard of that, yes.
And mm-hmm. they follow, Mark and his crew follow the bus down to Mexico, where it's completely refurbished, but the story is so amazing because it starts as this just sort of travelogue, in a sense, of following this bus. And for its life, like its retirement mm-hmm. phase, but where it's refurbished, where these artists paint these buses that are used for public bus service.
Wow.
In whatever town in Mexico. And they're painted just unbelievably beautifully, each one individually. But as a group of buses, there is a uniformity in the sense that they're all these wild buses, but they work as a group, you know, right. You know which the bus line, but so, and it's kind of like detailed and serviced, and I mean, it's given new parts, and but the artistry in it. And then what's happening is there's a subplot where local crime lords and local criminals stop buses on the streets, and they will rob the buses or hijack them, and et cetera. So there's this whole other sort of story to that gets taken on in this film. It's a great film.
Wow.
Sounds it was like at South film. By Southwest last year. Yeah. Anyway, so it sort of reminded me of that.
Well, the zipper and the spider were both completely refurbished when they got to Honduras. And the spider, Eddie had both rides. He had the zipper and the spider. They were side by side, both classic carnival rides. And the mm-hmm. spider, when Eddie had it, was the classic black spider. It was black, and the insides of the cars are white, and very, very, you know, the numbers on the cars almost look like, you know, cue ball numbers, and mm-hmm. classic carnival ride. I didn't recognize it when I saw it in Honduras.
Oh, really?
They had really mm-hmm. repainted it, like airbrushed, you know, spider webs on it. It was amazing.
Wow.
Amazing. And the zipper, they changed all the lighting to colors that they liked. And
can we get copies of the photos? You must have photos.
I have some photos, yeah.
Send me some photos. Mm-hmm. Make a note to yourself, because mm-hmm. We can put them up on the show's webpage.
Yes, I have. Yeah,
you know where my archive
I definitely page. Have a photo of the spider car, mm-hmm. and I have photos of the zipper, obviously.
Yeah, we want those too.
Okay,
we'll add them to the. There's a little. We can make a little photo album on this archive show.
Cool.
You know, when it gets onto Bebox.
Okay.
You mentioned you grew up in Oceanside. I'm sorry, mm-hmm. Ocean Park.
I grew up in I grew up in Maryland mm-hmm. and in the suburbs of Maryland. But during the summer as a teenager, it was everyone's dream, if you were a teenager living outside of Baltimore, to work at the beach in the summer. And that's what I did.
Okay. So you grew outside Baltimore.
Mm-hmm. mm-hmm. So I worked at in Ocean City, Maryland. You know, it's about a 3-hour drive to the beach.
Mm.
You know, very, very, very much a summer job.
Where did you stay overnight?
We stayed in a girls' boarding house. With there was like a den mother, her name was Mrs. Dove, I'll never forget. And there was an intercom system and a list of, I think, 38 rules. And I'm pretty sure we broke them all Yeah, we had a bong hiding in our closet. We mm-hmm. were bad girls. Mm-hmm. But we had a great time, and we made a lot of money for college. It was great. It was fun. But I love that culture. That beach culture is awesome.
Where did you go to school?
Then I went to art school. because why not? Oh, in Florida at this mm-hmm. terrible art school.
And then where did you first start taking film?
Well, when I got out of college, there were no computers. Mm-hmm. So I did paste up. You know, when you used to run type through a wax machine.
My parents both are graphic artists, mm-hmm. commercial artists.
Yeah, so I was very much like the old mm-hmm. school graphic artist in the studio. And I learned along the way to make commercials, TV commercials. And I was pretty successful. And I had done it for years and years and years. And at one point I went freelance. And my friend said, you know, you don't have to work every day. You should take a class. And I said, well, I've always wanted to make a documentary because I had done some real people campaigns. Mm-hmm. And so I took a class at NYU over the summer. It was actually two classes where they condensed the first year of NYU film school into a summer. It was crazy. I was almost 40. All the kids in the class were 18. It was so much fun. I never felt so stupid, but had so much fun in my life.
Sure. I sense in your personality an 18-year-old.
Oh, yeah. No, I've never progressed.
Yeah. God bless you, I say. And but don't, please don't.
That's where I made Beauty School. In the second class, you had to make a 10-minute film, and that was the beginnings of Beauty School. I mean, we didn't finish it in the summer, but, you know, I had all the footage from it.
Yeah,
it was really fun.
I bet. So you had actually had this is your second career.
Yeah. I wouldn't call it a career as much as a very expensive hobby, but
well,
it's
what do you make of it now?
It's been fun. Oh, being a filmmaker?
Mm-hmm.
I like to quote Jerry Maguire, you know, Jerry Maguire, the movie where he's, you know, Tom Cruise is in the bathroom and he's screaming and he's saying, you know, representing you is an up at dawn pride swallowing siege. That is what making a documentary is.
Mm-hmm. An up at dawn pride swallowing siege.
Mm-hmm.
I'll have to make note of that. We'll use
but
that.
If you love it, you do it. Mm-hmm. So.
And you do love it.
I do love it, of course.
Yeah. You were amidst the festival circuit with the film.
Mm-hmm.
You just came back
kind of started.
You did, okay,
yeah.
Right.
Well, just started in November. So.
Yeah, yeah, with Doc NYC being mm-hmm. your world premiere.
Mm-hmm.
And you, I know recently you just came back from Montana where you showed mm-hmm. Zipper at Big Sky Festival.
Right.
What was that like?
It was great. It was great. You know, Missoula is not a booming metropolis.
What?
So you meet a lot of people.
Great beaches, I understand.
Oh, yeah. I met a lot of guys, and I met a lot of guys who make films that I like, which I thought was really great.
It's this very highly curated.
Highly curated. And I mean,
not to say that most great film festivals, but they're bigger and broader. And this one seems, Big Sky seems, from what I hear, to be...
It's very intimate. I mean, you get to know, the programs were amazing. The you know, Gita, who runs the festival, was, you know, texting you saying, let's go on a hike. I mean,
who's that?
Gita, who runs the festival.
So Gita would text you saying, let's go for a hike.
Yeah, let's go for a hike. Unfortunately, I never went on the hikes because I was sitting in as many movies as possible. I think in 3 days, I didn't leave a chair. They were all so good, and the shorts were insanely great. It was really, really great shorts. Yeah, beautiful.
I'm going to True False in a couple of days, and I'm very excited because I think it has a similar reputation.
It does.
As being a very intimate, kind of hardcore.
Sadly, we did not get into True False, but from what I understand, it's very, very difficult to get into True False because they don't take very many films.
Right, yeah, exactly. I would feel disappointed but not insulted or
not
slighted in any way because, let's face it, there's thousands of fantastic documentaries or hundreds every year. And then there's a lot of other stuff. But, I mean, you know, when you're talking about degrees of like...
I feel for the programmers having to fish through all of them. I can't imagine the decisions they make.
Oh, my, yeah.
Yeah, and then I've had some big disappointments so far, too, but because, you know... When I made Muskrat Lovely, there were a lot less films around, so Muskrat Lovely did get into some things that I haven't gotten into this time.
Yeah.
Yeah, so it's disappointing. But I'm developing a hard shell turtle wax finish. So.
For that hard to swallow siege.
That's right.
Pride
for
swallowing.
Up at dawn, pride swallowing siege.
Yeah, exactly. we've been speaking with the post-pubescent Amy Nichols. Amy Nicholson. The film is called Zipper, by the way. It's so well made. So I want to make sure to give some credit where credit is indeed due. You produced and directed the film. You had a couple of editors on here.
Jonah Moran, who
and
is
John Young.
Amazing, and John Young, who is with, also amazing.
With additional help by Jenny Golden.
Yes, Jenny Golden. She did some assembly in the beginning that was really helpful for us. So, mm-hmm. Yeah.
Your
so,
director of photography.
All very talented.
Director of photography, Jerry Recius.
Jerry Recius, amazing guy. And Mark Schwartzbard and Ruben O'Malley also shot quite a bit of the film. So. And I have to give a shout out to the graphics team. Mm-hmm. My best friend Laura Smith was the lead designer. And then we had a bunch of guys who did different types of animation. And that was a bear. I will never do another map again, and probably neither will Laura. We're map gun shy now.
Map shy.
We're map shy.
Cartographically challenged.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, I imagine it's important because, you know, so many people that aren't familiar, or even those who are, but especially those who are not familiar with the terrain, maps are a great help in preferring information and data. And letting people know where they are and where things are and all that is so important to making the documentary experience.
And breaking down the scale for people of the size of the rezonings and what the, you know, what the Bloomberg administration's...
Putting in the graphic context.
Exactly.
So you can see it, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, they set out to rezone a lot of the city, and they succeeded. And this was yet another opportunity for that, which, you know, most of them have been very successful, at least business-wise, they've been very successful. Some of them have been pretty contentious within the neighborhoods.
Yes. So we're going to be showing Zibber. If you're listening to this, I encourage you to consider coming out on Wednesday, the 27th at 7 o'clock. Again, it's at the Brooklyn Society for Ethical Culture. It's a fun place to come. It is our last screening in the Brooklyn Reconstructed series. Not to say that there won't be more Brooklyn Reconstructed series happening. They just may not be in Brooklyn. They may be elsewhere, because we did one series in Oakland, and that has gone off real well, I understand, from my franchisor friend, Michael Orange. And we want to maybe take some variation or some semblance of Brooklyn Reconstructed to a few more cities. So we're trying to figure out what that's going to look like.
It is an issue that happens everywhere.
And people will come out. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, they just have to know we're doing it. And there must be local content in a number of cities. You mentioned you're from the Baltimore area, and there's another city I know that would probably appreciate filmmakers and conversations about these things, too.
Well, as we looked at what our issues were, which a lot of it was more what you outlined, which was losing character, losing the spirit of a place.
Yeah.
What does that mean to a sense of place? But, you know, if you really backed up a little bit and you stretched the tableau of the film, I guess, you get really into land use issues and also public-private partnerships.
Right.
And things that are really boring and really hard to understand, but really affect people's day-to-day lives.
Yeah.
So those things are happening everywhere.
And making them accessible is important, because so many people that showed up at these conversations after the films are like, well, why didn't I know about this? And how do I get involved? They do have to kind of be introduced to these concepts, and then they can go to the actual local community board meetings and the local hearings and actually understand the vernacular and participate in the process, as opposed to wait till it's a fait accompli, as has happened in Coney Island to some degree, as has happened at the Atlantic Yards, Fulton Mall,
Yeah, that's what happens to a lot of people.
They Williamsburg.
They sort of turn around and go, what happened to my neighborhood? Because I think the films, not just Zipper, but all the films, are very important in that respect, because it's a digestible hour or so of the information. You follow the story. Most of these stories take place over a series of, you know, 5 up to 10 years.
Yeah.
When you think about that, it's really hard to follow something like that unless it's literally happening next door to you, like in Sue's case, which she made a film about it. But unless it's literally happening across the street, you don't notice until it's kind of too late. So having filmmakers make these films and explain examples in an hour and 20 minutes is a really nice way to get a perspective on how these things happen.
Amy Nicholson, thank you for coming on.
Thanks for having me.
Muskrat, candlelight, doing the town and doing it right in the evening. It's pretty pleasing. Muskrat Susie, Muskrat Sam, do the jitterbug out in Muskrat Land, and they shimmy.